Hi, it's Liz Solar with my political frenemy and good pal, Jack Monson, and some of the topics on the table today. Well, we'll start with this one. Why is it that some people will not engage in some of those very difficult conversations? I mean, it could be a personal conversation, but we're really talking about the national conversation, just the types of things that we don't want to touch because we think we're going to be in hot water if we do. So why do you think some people, or most people, just don't want to engage?
We could name all of the horrible reasons, but I think one good reason for people not engaging, they just don't want to be wrong anymore. If you engage, now you have to answer for why you feel a certain way, or why you voted for someone 4 years ago, or why you did something or said something on social media. And it's like, you know what? I just choose not to engage. I'm not going to pay attention to politics. I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to even discuss it with my friends. They don't want to be ostracized by their friends. They don't want to lose their relatives, like you and I talked about on the last podcast. They don't want to lose that relative. It's just not worth it. We want to grow and prosper and all of the things that make America great. There's also part of us, we just want to have a little peace.
Hear, hear for that. Now, I just want to welcome people to Embark. As usual, we're in the middle of a conversation. My good friend and political frenemy, Jack Monson, and I like to convene every once in a while and talk about a better conversation. And,
yeah,
and truly, one of the things that have happened, and just a little bit of a preamble, there are certain people that I can never get together with socially, even if I agree with them, without something political coming up. And it's always this like, wah, 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 Debbie Downer, like, it's Friday night. I'm having a cocktail. Let
right.
me be in peace with my pink and blue sky thoughts. And
yeah,
you just can't get away from it sometimes. And I understand I'm a little bit of a news junkie. So I watch a lot of it. And that's why at a certain point, I need to put that aside and talk about something really ridiculous or watch something like Bridesmaids or Knocked Up. So I can just revel in the political incorrectness that is comedy. But to your point, there are people who just will not engage, kicking and screaming, I'm not going to talk to that person because they're not on my team. So they are bad,
they're
or they're
bad.
Stupid.
Right. They voted for the wrong person. Therefore, they are shut out of my life forever. If I shut everybody out of my life who voted differently from me, I would pretty much spend the day talking to my dog because I don't know anyone who's voted the same as me in every election for the past couple of decades.
We can get to a very micro level. And when you talk about the relationships that have blown up, some of them are between spouses.
Yeah.
Who either continue to live together or not. Not only did you have a difference in who you voted for, but now you hate each other and you really can't bear the thought of being next to that person in your bed because they voted a different way.
Right. I would love to be in a relationship with a Democrat so I could do to a Democrat what they've been doing to me for years.
Oh, that is so
low. Oh, that's
low.
A cheap
Come on.
Such a cheap joke, but I couldn't resist. I'm
honest to God, Jack Monson, your day will come.
No, I think it's healthy to be in a relationship with someone who believes different things. You know, it's good to have someone who is on the same page with you as far as goals and aspirations and your direction in life, ideas on rearing children and ideas on where you want to live and things like that. That's terrific. Having someone who has a little bit of a different taste than you in philosophy, music, art, and yes, even politics, I think that's healthy. You could actually have good conversations with someone and not just live in an echo chamber like I think a lot of people do.
We've become very good at repeating and not very good at learning. Even if you tell me everything that you believe, I still don't agree with you, but I really learned something about why you think that. Sometimes we have to get to the root cause of why people believe what they believe. What are their experiences, their circumstances? What's happened in their lives? I mean, some people have described many years ago, a Republican is just a Democrat who got mugged.
Yeah, or the one I use a lot is if Election Day was on Christmas, we would always elect Democrats. And if election day was on April 15th, we would only elect Republicans. You're absolutely right what you said about somebody's circumstances and kind of where they are in life, because the one thing that makes everyone different is their experiences in life. Even people who grew up in the same house might not have the exact same shared experiences. So
I have 5 siblings. If someone asked us to write the story of our lives in that house, there are a few things that we would agree upon. But at a certain point, there'd be so much, you know, where we differed, how we feel about our parents, what we feel like we got from them. There's a pecking order, like who's there first, who's there last.
Yeah.
So all of that affects how we get to where we're getting to. People who came into this country through the legal channels, and they sometimes are outraged to see illegal immigrants in here, because they're like, you know, we came in, we did all the paperwork, we started businesses, we're actually employing people. I'm not saying they're right or wrong, but they have an actual experience, lived experience to compare that to. And I think a lot of the things we get outraged about are things that we have absolutely no experience with.
So it actually makes sense if you're a big anti-illegal immigration person, maybe let those people speak who really have some experience and could actually share a story of why following the rules is important, and maybe learn why they left the place where they came from. That could probably tell the story a lot better than just, I'm against illegal immigration. Great, thank you. But what's your reason behind that? There are lots of other people who actually have a reason to be so passionate about it.
What's that other person about? We don't consider the other person's point of view.
Yeah.
Someone opens their mouth and then we pounce. We're like, you're wrong because blah, 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 right? It happens on both sides. Like, you're an idiot. That's going to be a very productive conversation. We don't think about what is that person's point of view before we have that conversation. One of the things that we're really missing is a curiosity. I remember having a coworker and I wasn't really sure of their, it was unclear what their sexual orientation was.
Sure. We've all worked with that person. Yes.
Right. Because they had a very long relationship with one gender and then ended up marrying another. And we're out one day, and I find that if we go out with somebody to eat, we're always going to have a pretty good conversation.
Right. That's the whole idea.
Or at least be able to approach it. As you say, break bread. Well, this was ice cream because, you know,
even better.
How I feel about ice cream, right? So we're out and we're enjoying our ice cream. I'm like, so are you gay? Are you straight? Are you bi? What's your deal? I'm not sure this person ever really answered the question, but they appreciated that I was willing to engage, because it really was this elephant in the room where people were making jokes about it, kind of scandalized, like, well, wait a minute, the return coat, or, you know, whichever side they had been on before, they crossed over, right? It's serviceable to have those conversations, because at least you get to know them a little bit better as a human being, regardless of what other labels we want to stick on other people, because we love sticking a label on people. It just makes it easy for us.
Yeah. What you notice in the first few minutes of our chat here today, we've joked about Republicans and Democrats. It's actually pretty easy to make jokes about those two political parties, because let's face it, both parties are in shambles. But notice I make fun of Democrats, but I would not take a low blow at liberals or progressives, because that's actually a philosophy. And I have friends who share some of those ideas. I think taking a shot at Republican or Democrat is just a little bit more universally accepted, because I think we all pretty much agree that both parties are pretty poorly branded right now.
The party labels mean nothing now, because
absolutely.
One of them doesn't even have a platform. So what are you about? And the other one doesn't really know how to brand themselves in any way. You can't even take credit for the good things that you do. You don't even know how to tell people that you did something good and why that's a benefit to somebody.
Right.
Just bad marketing, I guess.
Right.
But the two-party system, it really is at a crossroads. Do we do a renovation on it? We're dancing around the same thing over and over again, not even every 4 years. We're always in an election cycle every day of the year.
It will take someone, not you or I, giving the party's advice. It will take a leader to step up and reinvent their party. Ronald Reagan did it in 1980. The Republican Party was in a shambles. It had a horrible scandal and a president resigned. And then Reagan came along and said, no, no, the Republican Party is over here. It's not where it was over there. The Democrats did the same thing in the first half of the 20th century after having, you know, not so good luck for about 20 or 30 years. They came along with a guy by the name of Roosevelt who reinvented the Democratic Party and was very successful, you know, was president for longer than anyone else. It will take on both sides that person. As you and I discussed on our last podcast, I don't see that person on either side who's going to reinvent the party. I see a lot of people who just want to say, yeah, yeah, me too. I'm the next person to lead the party. And I don't see that person yet.
Well, the examples that you gave are people who probably were watching and listening to what was going on. So it isn't so much the party, it's that they delivered something that people were yearning for.
Yeah.
Many Democrats voted for Ronald Reagan. You know, they're mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan Democrats, right? Mm-hmm. Barack Obama, you know, most notable example. So really, it's listening to people. What are people telling you? And how can you deliver on the things that people are asking for or yearning for? There is a yearning now, but it has really been corrupted by forces that have been really unhealthy. And I personally feel it has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with power plays and having the wrong people with the biggest megaphones and appealing to things that are very real mm-hmm. for some people, being overlooked, not being listened to. Those are fundamental human needs. Mm-hmm. And when you don't feel seen or heard or understood, you get angry. And if someone can come out and assuage that by telling you how put upon you are, you're going to go for that person. And I think that's how we ended up with the former president, who is still disputing the legitimacy of the results of the prior election.
You're talking about Hillary Clinton, right?
She went along. See, you are just really stirring me up today, Jack Watson.
I totally get what you're saying.
I'm not saying that people are bad. I'm saying that people can have their wishes corrupted. I see so much of it as mean-spirited now, and we're getting a little off topic about people not having the productive conversation or why people are so hesitant to get into the conversation that might lead to some conflict or hearing the other person out.
Can I share a quick story about party labels? Since we last spoke, I had the chance to meet Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. I was in D.C. week before last doing some work with on behalf of small business owners in the United States with the International Franchise Association. And Senator Manchin was kind enough to come speak with us and meet with our group. I could not tell you the last time I met someone who I probably agreed with more, who was at the level of government that he's at. He talked a lot about that to this group, basically saying what I've said for years. I'm socially a liberal and fiscally a conservative. Where he gets it is, I think that's about 75% of America. Our parties, either one, won't let us be that way. I'm listening to this guy thinking, wow, if he ever voted for president, count me in. He's so much more on the same track as me as many other people. I don't think he'd ever get elected president because he's just not enough of a out there personality. He's just a guy who has a great story to tell, coming from humble beginnings, trying to help some people, trying to help the people who need help, but also trying to make business work and trying to grow the country and, you know, all of those things. But he's not going to start screaming about issues that either side are really passionate about. There's a lot of us who feel that way. And maybe this can kind of get back to where you were going with the unengaged. When the leaders are so different than how you feel, and in my case, maybe it's socially liberal, fiscally conservative, and there's just not enough leaders, it kind of makes me think, well, maybe I just won't vote campaign or follow it this time. I'll wait till the next one and see if somebody comes around then.
So when you're saying, I'm not sure that I want to vote or campaign for anybody, you're having that difficult conversation, but on a much bigger scale. I'm just not going to get involved in this.
Yeah.
And that is the disease that's spreading through the nation. I'm not going to do this. I'm not excited about it. But it is the one way we really can participate, hopefully, in a way that is fair and legal. I can make snarky remarks about gerrymandering, you know, and some of the things that have been done to the point of, if we are a socially liberal country, why are all these things being done to tear at the fabric of these socially liberal policies, the will of the people, and that's being taken away? And that is more problematic for me than almost anything else.
Now go over and look at the economic side of it. The two examples I cited earlier about someone taking the reins and sort of recharging their own party, Reagan, FDR, those were all economic issues, right? There were many social issues alive in 1980 and in 1932. People chose those leaders because of they needed a change economically. And no matter how much the world was burning in 1932, and it was, they chose someone completely based on where they thought he could take us from an economic standpoint. I think the same in 1980, regardless of how people felt about their religious views or social views or anything else, it was an economic decision.
But I want to take a very concrete example that can be used both as a, you know, social liberalism and also an economic conservatism. Let's talk about the Dobbs decision,
mm-hmm.
the chipping away at Roe v. Wade, mm-hmm. and saying to people, we don't really care what the circumstances, you're going to have that baby.
This law was incorrect and unconstitutional 50 years ago when it was decided upon. And I tend to agree with that. The socially liberal side of me says, I'm all for a woman's right to choose, 100%. I think that law was incorrect and it needs to be, something needs to be done about it. And we've spent 50 years kicking the can down the road, make an amendment to the Constitution. Why not? That would make it concrete and it couldn't be thrown out by a future Supreme Court or, you know, something even crazier like an executive order.
Jack, that is a prevailing argument, and there's some validity to it. At the same time, it has become law of the land. And also, I don't think that the government has, and, you know, I have very mixed feelings about abortion itself, because there's no woman who wakes up in the morning and goes, yay, red letter day for me, I get
right.
to abort a child. Like,
right.
that is just,
right.
I often think that it's demonized in a certain way. It shouldn't be an issue at this point. We should not be having this conversation about a woman's right to choose her agency over her own body. The fact that this has been dismantled and they're saying state by state and state by state, we're voting no for a woman's right. My point is really to the economic parts of this. If you're saying that the economics are what are important, why would you have somebody give birth to a child, and particularly to a child who might have several types of special needs? The government may have to pay for if it's a single mom or
oh, no,
if it's a mom with a lot
there.
Of kids. There are a lot of economic consequences to having a child who you're not ready to have.
I'll take it a step further. The government doesn't pay for anything. Taxpayers pay for it. Yeah.
I don't mind paying for things. I think it's the social contract that we make with each other. I'm going to pay for your road. I'm going to pay for your hurricane. Could you please pay for the damage from my blizzard? Could you please pay for my new bridge or to educate my child?
Could you pay for my college education?
I don't know. I'm still on the fence with that one. I think that the way banks have ingratiated themselves into the process, the way colleges themselves have behaved in terms of pricing.
Mm.
So the way schools have been set up, I mean, we have promised to talk about university and colleges and the structure, people are being priced out of an education. I'm not sure whether we should pay for it or not. I have to have more information about what that actually does. I know people who default on loans that someone else is going to get stuck paying for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So either way, we pay for it.
Yeah. I'm not sure why. I take that back. I know exactly why. One party has pinned their hopes and dreams on this college forgiveness, which in and of itself is the dumbest term I've ever heard. There's no loan that gets forgiven like this. It just means,
particularly not student loans,
everybody else is going to pay for it. I never went to college. I can't afford college. My kid can't afford college. And I'm going to pay for, you know, upper middle class Bradley down the street. I'm going to pay for his college education. How on earth that is, as people like to say, someone paying their fair share?
Jack, using that as an example and having that difficult conversation, because I can't say that I'm completely for or against. And if you have an aspiration, if you have a talent, a gift, and you are dedicated to serving other people, it's helpful for the government. Like, let's help those people help other people. Mm-hmm. That's what I think government at its best does. You know, yeah. The GI Bill, there's a generation of particularly men who would never gotten beyond where they were. And there was also a quid pro quo. You served your country, you served it honorably, and we are going to gift you with some opportunity to improve your lot in life by getting this education, which opened up so many other industries for people. Perhaps we can think about models that help people advance in that way. Like you, my background is firmly working class. We never qualified for the special programs because we weren't, quote unquote, poor enough. So we worked. I paid for my college education. I did get some scholarship money based on actual merit. Then the rest of it was carrying trays.
Right.
And taking cocktail orders, you know. So that's the...
I knew we've met before. That's where I know you from.
I really overserved you. I'm sorry. Now I'm a generation beyond that. My kids have very much benefited from my ability to be educated, right? They've had
absolutely
entitlements to things that I never did. So I see that, you know, there's a generation behind me and perhaps a couple behind me where people feel like, what about me? When is it going to be my time? Mm-hmm. And I get the outrage on the other side. I get it.
What you said about people wanting to serve and we need to figure out an avenue for those folks to serve. There is no better example than what you said about military service. Probably the best deal, the most fair thing ever has been things like the GI Bill and military service paying for your education, and military service paying for your health care, that paying for, you know, what is sometimes pretty poor health care. It should probably be a lot better for the people mm-hmm. who got injured serving all of us. Maybe there is some other kind of service that 18, 19, 20-year-olds could do in order to qualify for being exempt from paying for higher education.
Right. And I'm not recommending bringing back a draft, or I think it's paying a pretty big...
I don't know. That draft is going pretty well in Russia right now.
Do you remember Monty Python and the Holy Grail and they're getting like shot at and they're like, run away.
It's nice to see that happening over there, actually. So
it goes to the just war. And I think the generations have avoided getting involved in the military because we saw what happened in Vietnam, an unwinnable war that was lied about. So it's very difficult to say, I'm going to serve my country, because I think people don't feel that it's a good enough cause. I think World War II, it felt like a cause everybody could get behind. And if you have never been to the World War II Museum in New Orleans or seen, I think Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks collaborated on this documentary about World War II, everybody... Like, not everybody, because there were people who thought, well, we shouldn't be involved in this war, or FDR is a jerk, or, you know, whatever they felt at the time. There was an overwhelming sense of mission throughout the country. Everybody was, here's my wedding ring, here's my pots and pans, melt it down and make that missile. There was this incredible generosity and sense of mission among a critical mass of Americans to be involved in that war effort, because they felt that it was really clear what they were fighting against and what they were fighting for. Getting back to our original conversations about, you know, what is our shared mission? I'm not sure that we have one.
Oh, we can't even get 50% of the population to vote. They're not going to go without, even if we're at war. You know, we saw that over the past two decades with the war with Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. People on the home front didn't have to sacrifice a whole lot. And that's a good thing. I'm glad we didn't have to. Mm-hmm. But compare it to World War II and World War I, where, you know, people on the home front were making sacrifices and food was being rationed and people were really supporting the troops. We haven't seen that in a lifetime. And I'm not so sure that we will ever see that again when, like I said, we can't even get 50% of the people to vote in an election right now.
We need to come back to what are the things that bring us together, because we all want the same things.
Why can't we get someone to step up and be electable without pandering to the wild fringes on either side?
We started this, like, why people don't get involved. And so you and I are like, yeah, let's mix it up. Let's get into it. And I'm not saying we're the only ones doing it. But for people who aspire to do it, I think you have to put away being likable.
Yeah,
I like you. I disagree with you, but I, you know, I already like you. So people hate conflict. We run away from it. Nobody likes to, no matter what, it's their spouse or their boss. Or the more we withhold it, the more the resentment grows, because you cannot hide your energy. You can hide your words, but you can't hide the intent behind your words for long. So people are going to pick up, it's really uncomfortable and I have no idea why. And then people are guessing why you're not talking to them or you're not being straight with them. And we have a hard time just being direct, being a little kinder in that directness. I don't want to demolish anybody with my words or make anybody feel badly. And I know you're the same.
I think that's a big part of this two-party system of two parties who I think we both don't like very much right now. It's easier just to point fingers and try to demolish the other side and, you know, show clips every night of your guy being ridiculous. And then tomorrow night I'll show clips of my guy being, or of your guy being ridiculous and vice versa. It's easier just to take shots at that when what really works. Oh my gosh, I'm going to go back to Reagan and FDR again.
Oh, those guys.
Those guys. You know what they didn't do? I don't think I ever heard a film clip or an audio clip or a radio thing of FDR talking about his opponent. He was talking about big picture, mobilizing a country, right? And doing big things. Punching down is not what people wanted right now. And I think both of these guys just reached up and stopped talking about opponents and their people and their shortcomings. And they were talking about big picture ideas and concepts and trying to get people to, like I said, mobilize and be inspired.
Why do you think that so many of the political, particularly political advertising, is so negative? And people look for more. And we're in the business. And
yeah.
There's a lot of political I won't do because it's this person's a big jerk or, you know, worse. I just don't want to sling mud. That's
right. That's
not my style. And I don't want to contribute to that conversation. So why is it that has become so successful in capturing people's attention?
Because, we also have a society where the most popular TV shows are things about ridiculous nonsense, and it's all negative, and people just lap it up. I mean, whether you're talking about celebrity stature and that kind of thing, that's what a lot of people are interested in. It's the connection between Madison Avenue and K Street in Washington, D.C., right? And they see an easy way to make a buck is let's go out and we're going to say all of these horrible things about Donald Trump, or we're going to say all these horrible things about Joe Biden. And let's face it, neither one of those guys, you really have to make up a lot of horrible things because you can just speak the truth. And we're just going to keep shining a spotlight on these people, but we're not going to talk about what we could do to make the world better and what our ideas are, because that's too hard. It's easier just to make a commercial and drop $50 million in TV ads about why this candidate's bad or this candidate's terrible. And the people who are consulting and making those marketing decisions and advertising decisions get really rich off of doing that. So kudos to you for not doing political ads. I would not do one either for something I didn't feel good about, regardless of which side they were on. I don't want to be a part of that to make a quick buck. For the next year, I actually have to serve you know, real customers. So I will take your vow right now, and I will not do negative advertising either.
To your point about bringing up somebody's foibles and flaws and attacking people, as a professional, do you ever go out and say, here's my competitor and here's what a piece of junk they are?
Absolutely
you talk about
not.
The benefits yeah. of working yeah. with you, right?
Yeah.
Like on a micro level.
Yeah. I've wanted to see this for years with primaries and primary debates. I've always thought a candidate who came out and said, you know, if you don't vote for me, vote for one of these other six people on the stage tonight, because we have really good ideas about moving the country forward. And we can't even get people of the same party to not attack each other on a primary stage. I don't know. Because you're right. In our day-to-day lives, when I'm talking to someone who brings up a competitor, even if it's a competitor who I think is a complete piece of shit, mm-hmm. you know what my response is? Oh, they're terrific. They have a lot of good things going for them. They have mm-hmm. a nice, you know, pretty good software. They've got some great people working there, which I'm sure is true. Every company has some really yes. good people working there. But
right.
I never want to be that guy who's just coming out saying, well, you know, they're terrible and they're overpriced. And because in everywhere except politics, that makes you look bad. But apparently in politics, it works.
Look good. I totally agree with what you said about the, and I will gladly use the word garbage to describe a lot of what's on television, what has not only brought down the IQ, but the civil discourse among people of all types. Nobody owns that. That belongs to everybody who thinks it's great to have one person denigrate another person or humiliate another person. I'm just not going there. That's just not entertainment for me.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if you like that, please do not complain about the politics if that's what you're feasting on every day for your recreation. You're just getting more of the same.
Very well said. If that's what you're feasting on, then you're probably going to love the 2024 elections, right?
Oh, I can't. My head, it's very overwhelming. I can't even think about it.
We said this last time that it's, if people thought the last 4 years or 8 years or whatever were crazy, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because this is about to get as ugly as can be. I can't imagine that we're going to have this peaceful, well-thought, civil debate over the next 2 years. I just don't know how that would ever happen.
It's like the guys that and women that I would not want to put together a free lunch. They're doing the whole party planning.
Yeah.
As always, it's a great conversation.
What are we going to talk about next time?
Having those uncomfortable conversations. I do want to very soon talk about reality TV, because my idea of reality TV is HGTV. That is my porn.
Okay.
If it's Guy Fieri on
right.
a food truck,
right.
I'm loving that. Other
okay.
than that, I don't want to watch your Real Housewives of Hell. I don't.
Oh my gosh. See, there's another thing we agree on. I can't imagine the hours that someone gives up to watch drama of quite uninteresting people. I'm not sure why that happens, but we'll save that for next time and we'll dive deep into reality TV. I do want to share one more thing with you before we go. I saw this.
You just
recently.
Don't want to leave me, do you?
I know. I don't want to leave
you. We're turning you into a lefty yet.
Yes.
Go ahead.
you know, everything we talked about earlier with the political parties and the labels, I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, but there was a great quote about the problem isn't between Republicans and Democrats. The problem is between authoritarians and libertarians. And the person who said those words many years ago was George Orwell.
I knew I liked him.
Yeah, it isn't about which side you're on. It's about authority versus liberty. Call yourself whatever party you want to call yourself, but that's the real fight, is between authority and liberty.
Well, you are free to come out and play anytime.
I will be ringing on your door soon. Thanks so
Yay.
Much, Liz. It was great chatting with you, and we'll do it again soon.
If you like what you hear on Embark, or even if you don't, and you want to get in on the conversation, please get in touch, liz@lizsolar.com. I also appreciate if you share this episode with a friend. Pay it forward. Tell someone about it, and please subscribe. Next week, we have a conversation about reality TV. Do you hate to love it? Do you love to hate it? Is it pure entertainment or is it absolute blood sport? We have our opinions about it, and we're not afraid to share them. In the meantime, I know you have many choices as to how to spend your time during your jam-packed week. The fact that you're spending 30 minutes or so with us just makes me very grateful. So thanks for listening. On behalf of Embark, I'm Liz Solar. See you next week.